All the sports, all the news, SportsFire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches, and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. SportsFire, powered by Ricoh. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to SportsFire. Welcome to our syndication partner listeners, West Coast FM in Namibia, 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Knysna FM, Cow FM in Port Alfred, Wild Coast FM in East London, and Eldo's FM in Johannesburg. On the show tonight, we're going to go to Cairo, catch up with Kickoff.com's Tiani Mabasa. Obviously, disappointment for Pirates, but let's look at the positive. The fact that they got all the way to the CAF Champions League final is a massive achievement. SportsFire rugby analyst Dan Retif, he's still in Turkey, no doubt shopping in Istanbul. He was there for the Turkish Golf Open, but hopefully he did watch the rugby. One of South Africa's top female amateur golfers, Kim Williams. I had the pleasure of playing with her in a four ball yesterday at the beautiful Copper Leaf. Wow, what a player. I'm hoping to get a European tour card at the end of this year, and there's a name to watch out for, Kim Williams. South African surfer Tanika Hoffman, she's been doing big things already, winning some big events, and another win for her at the weekend. We'll be talking surfing on the show tonight as well. Teletrack analyst Shane McGregor with some of the big numbers, the pools, the payouts, soccer and horse racing, and of course Norma, off-the-wall sports analyst. Clips tonight, SA Rugby, the movie about Lance Armstrong, Rafael Nadal, BBC Football News, and if you celebrate your birthday on the 11th of November, you celebrate with, among others, Fuzzy Zeller and Philip Lahm. Twitter address at Joffa's My Boy, Facebook Graham Joffe, the website sportsfire.co.za. SportsFire, powered by Ricoh, South Africa's leading provider of document management solutions.
Daddy, why do you come here?
Because here I can be creative.
Why is that important?
Because that's how we create our document solutions.
Why do you need document solutions?
Because they revolutionize the way people work.
What's revolutionized?
At Ricoh, we have as many document solutions as a six-year-old has questions. Why? Because when integrated creatively, information and technology drive productivity and profitability. Ricoh. Imagine. Change.
My favorite soapbox topic, SASCOG. Anyway, they had a special AGM at the weekend and agreed upon a constitution for SASCOG to become an association. However, only the constitution was agreed upon, no elections. So SASCOG, the non-profit organization, is being dissolved, and SASCOG, the association, will now be running amateur sport in South Africa. So an association will be running associations. First of all, is this all legal and above board? And what about some of the other things? SASCOG, the association, has a constitution but no committee. SASCOG, the association, cannot open a bank account. SASCOG, the association, can only call a general meeting when the membership has stipulated in the constitution that they call for a general meeting. SASCOG, the association, cannot make any decisions. SASCOG, the association, cannot employ anyone until it has a committee. The employees of SASCOG can only be transferred across to SASCOG, the association, in terms of the Labor Relations Act. And then SASCOG, the association, still has to have elections. What about all those questions? And you would think that such a vital clause in the agenda would not so easily have been overlooked, you would think. So until elections are called and held, SASCOG, the association, remains just a constitution. So in other words, do we currently have an Olympic body in South Africa running sport? And I would just love to know the reasons for changing to an association. Probably, in my opinion, just to make sure that there's less accountability.
This is SportsFire with Graham Joffe, powered by Ricoh.
Off to Cairo we go after Pirates played against Al Ahly in that second leg of that Champions League final. They lost it 2-0, but plenty positives to take out of it, AT. Getting to the final is a hell of an achievement already.
Yeah, absolutely, boss. No, thanks for having me once again. You know, we can take out a lot of positives from this, you know. There's so much that we learned from their campaign in Africa, you know. So for me, much as they lost, you know, there's so much that we can take away from this game.
I missed the game. Do Pirates have some decent chances?
Yeah, they missed plenty of chances. You know, I remember Lennox Bacena, you know, the keeper, and he couldn't take it, you know, and Phil Scholar as well. And, you know, they, Alaska, on the other hand, they just got two chances and they put them away. And that was the match for them. You know, so if they took their chances, they could have done better, Pirates. You know, they had an opportunity to actually win this match. But you can understand where maybe the nerves were coming from, because, you know, I've never seen anything like that in terms of the crowd. You know, it was just amazing. They were just pushing their side, you know. So for Alakli playing at home in the second leg actually worked for them.
And then what about these green lasers that were supposedly being shone in the players' eyes? I mean, it's been a problem worldwide, but certainly in other stadia as well. And I see Fekile and Balula is all upset about it. And you know what? It's almost become part of the game, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, definitely was. And it's a disadvantage for the opposition, you know, for a traveling team. In this case, Pirates, it was definitely a disadvantage for them, you know. And this is something they've spoken about, you know. I recall my conversation with Roger Dis after the match, and he said, you know what, we asked the photo official if, you know, we could walk off the pitch if it continues. And, you know, we got to find a response from there. So, you know, those kind of things, they don't work, because they put the opposition at the disadvantage, because the players are complaining about it as well, the lack of sensitivity. And like Lihuat, when we chatted to him after the game, you know, was complaining about the same thing. They had to endure the same sort of frustrating sort of stuff, you know, in Tunisia as well. And Kef must step in and do something about it.
I'm glad they did play on, because can you imagine the drama had they protested and walked off the pitch? I mean, some of those players may have not got out of there alive.
Definitely, boss. You know, we had so many sort of funny moments. You know, you can laugh about it now, but you know, looking back, you know, it was one of those moments where you think anything can happen. Yeah, I remember we're sitting in the media box. And the fans, you know, came storming in, and they took our seats, and we were forced to be moved. For the whole match, we went without any internet, you know, and can you imagine the life of a journalist without any internet? So all around, you know, people suffered, you know. So this is what happens in other countries. But when they come to South Africa, you know, they're in heaven there. And then maybe we must just take them to hell and maybe put them in Alex, in the middle of Alex, and say, you know what? We can't take it anymore.
Yeah, we put you in Alex, and for the games at FNB Stadium, enjoy the game.
then we don't give you any police escort like they did with us.
Roger's done a great job getting them to the final, and he's probably right when he said we lost the tie in Joburg. The 1-1 draw at home was probably the big result.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that he's done a great job, because a lot of people saying, you know, Roger must go on the social platforms. And I just hope something to prevail, because this is a man who deserves to continue. You know, he's done a fantastic job for Pirates. And sometimes, you know, the fans look at the facts on the table. For starters, the match against Alakli yesterday, it was not Roger's fault in any way. You know, there was players missing the easiest of chances, and you blaming the coach for that. I think for me, you know, without due respect, that's stupid.
Pirates come back now, and their league schedule, Pirates, bottom of the table, they've played 3 games, while all the other teams have played 9 or 10. Their schedule now is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely. It'll take time for them to catch up, because I think in the end, they still have to play in the Telkom Cup as well, you know, while other teams continue to play, you know, their league matches. So, yeah, that didn't work out this season. You know, we have to find ways. If our teams are playing in Africa, we have to accommodate them, but making sure that they don't fall so many games behind.
Just quickly looking at the log then before we let you go, Sundowns, PSL-wise, Sundowns have opened up a 2-point lead at the top. So things are looking good for Pitso at the moment.
Yeah, you know, when things are going well for him, he's got a big mouth about it. So maybe, you know, this is his time to shine, you know. But Pitso's a very good coach, you know. Like I said in the past, if they give him a chance at Sundowns, if they give him the time to do his job, you know, not like with Roger, where you don't know whether tomorrow he'll be there or not. I think he can take Sundowns to greater heights. It's just a matter of being patient with the coach and making sure that when they lose, you know, they actually back him, you know, support him and support his players. So I think Sundowns can finally win something, because there's so many seasons without any trophies. And I think this is for them, you know, to definitely do the job this time around.
When do you guys get back? Are you flying back this evening?
Yeah, we're flying at 18:55. We're flying with your sports minister, Tiklem Balu, as well.
Can I give you some questions for him?
Yeah, please. That's just for questions. Yeah, and then we're flying with the rest of the team as well. We're all going to arrive at home at 10:55 tomorrow.
10:55, landing at OR Tambo tomorrow morning.
Yes.
Great stuff. T, have a safe life back, my brother. Great catching up.
All right, boss.
Take care. Tiani Mabasa from kickoff.com, live there from Cairo. Just to quickly bring you up to speed on what's happening in the cricket, and it's looking good for the Proteas again. Managed to get 269. AB de Villiers, another 100. What a player. Anyway, Proteas got 268. The target's 269, and Pakistan already in some early trouble. 9 for the loss of 2 wickets. Good start for the Boks on their end-of-year campaign, end-of-year tour. A 24-15 win over Wales at the Millennium Stadium. Let's take a listen to what Heineke Meyer and John de Villiers had to say afterwards. This is courtesy of SA Rugby before we go to Dan Retief.
Yeah, first I want to thank the Lord. I really believe we've been blessed. It was a really, really tough encounter. We always knew it was going to be very physical out there, and I think he probably asked Sean about that, or John about that. But, I thought it could have gone either way. But very happy that we, was really focused, very disciplined, and you can see there's a lot of experience in the team. And to score 3 tries against North, I'll take it any day. And just have very, very proud of the guys that we've won this game.
Yeah, it's test match rugby, and that's never easy. So, they obviously, the talk was all week that they will bring it physically. I made my debut 11 years ago today, 11 years ago for South Africa, and I think the one thing that's always part of this team is we bring the physicality, and we sort of pride ourselves on that. They were up for it, but again, I think we probably won that battle tonight, we're happy about that. But yes, it was physical, and you don't expect anything less when you play Wales.
Roaming the streets of Istanbul, Sportsfire rugby analyst Dan Retief. Hello, Danny.
Yes, hi, Joffers. How are you doing?
No, very good. Well, we'll get on to the rugby now as well. I just want to know, Turkish Open, Golf Open, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. And, it came to the most sort of incredible crescendo at the end. Jamie Donaldson making a hole-in-one to sort of draw level. The young guy, Debusson from France, he in fact thought Jamie Donaldson had chipped in, only to find out he'd actually made a hole-in-one. The one thing it does bring home, though, to cover a live golf event is how fantastic golf is on TV. Because the camera can be everywhere. The camera is ubiquitous. Because when you cover it on foot, I was trying to see what Debusson was doing and missed the hole-in-one. But it came to a really good ending. I think Turkey and Turkish Airlines and their whole government department, every department that is involved, really throw their weight behind it. Because not only do they want to create Turkey as a destination for golf, and that area of Belek, in Antalya, it's got fantastic golf courses, all beautifully turned out. So they made an impression on me. You can hear, that it's obviously what they're trying to do, I think, is the way South Africa must go, because, we're not that far away. We don't have a big time change from Europe. And boy, we can offer golf and wildlife and cities like Durban and Cape Town that I think the Europeans would just jump at.
Yeah, and some good finishes from South Africans. Georgie Kutsi, Darren Fichorden. I was actually speaking to George Kutsi's mother yesterday at Copperleaf, and I didn't realize that he had actually broken his hand and he'd been out for a while, and hence he hadn't played. But fortunately, it's a kind of a break where it's not going to affect his golf career, which is that's a big thing. But it was great to see that he's playing some good golf again.
Yeah, and I was just very disappointed for Justin Walters. There's a guy who has no amateur record to speak of, which in the modern world, that is almost unheard of. He did go to America for college golf. He had some problems in his personal life, relationship problems. He nearly gave golf away, and then he came back, took it on again, and he just missed getting into Dubai, you know, but now he's really right up there. He's riding high. His status next year will be very high. He's made a lot of money, you know, and he showed that he can cope in that sort of rarefied atmosphere. You know? And then George Kutsia came through, Thomas Aitken came through. In fact, all of them, eventually Darren Fichard, you know, he started with a 64 and finished with a 65. So the possibilities are there. I think for the organizers, the best part of all was that Tiger Woods was competitive, you know, because the word was that they paid him $3 million to put in an appearance. Of course, he did put in an appearance on the Bosphorus Bridge to drive a ball
from east to
west, you know, literally from Europe to Asia. But he was competitive and he was right in there, you know. The funny thing is being close to Tiger, you know, he is the world's number one golfer. And I'll tell you, Joffers, he's not loved. You know, people don't warm to Tiger because he sort of bristles and he says, don't come near, you know. But you can't question his golf and you can't question his commitment.
Sure, and his drive and his popularity when it comes to actually big events as well, despite being
he's an electric personality, you know. He owns the TV screen, and the crowds at this particular tournament were way beyond what they expected they might get, you know. So they were all very chuffed, and that's because of him, you know. He is a world figure, and he would definitely be in the top five most visible sportsmen in the world, you know. So he is very expensive. He's not a charming guy, but the public get drawn to him.
Yeah. Very happy for Justin Walters. I actually forgot about that because he's played exceptionally well over the last couple of weeks. Right. How did you rate the Bach performance over the weekend?
Well, I was very lucky. You know, thanks to my old friend and your friend, Louis Martin, you know, who now manages players for the ISM group. He's a former captain of Parkview Golf Club, so I've known him for many years. And Louis managed to, I think they jippoed the connection somehow and found us the rugby, and so I was able to watch it. In the end, I was very disappointed because I thought the Bucks started exceptionally well. It looked as though they were going to just silence Wales for another 100 years, you know, the way they started. And then they took their foot off the pedal. And largely, I think, because Alain Roland sort of lost the plot to me, you know. I'm not being a whinging South African, you know, because I think there were some things that went against Wales as well. You know, for instance, our third try, which was the clinching try, it then turned out that Jaffrey had been offside. But I just think the way he blew, he was too pedantic on that Millennium Stadium field, which is very slippery, and the forwards are slipping around. For instance, he gave Quinny Oosthuizen a yellow card when he went down for his very first scrum, you know. And sure, the team was on a warning for scrum problem, but he was the new prop. He hadn't got the warning, you know. And I tell you what, coaches, when a player is on a yellow card like that and it's a prop forward, often they send on a new player to avoid the yellow card, you know. So there was a lot wrong, you know, but the Bucks got a win. And you will recall that I said all along they were outright favourites. I couldn't believe how people were talking up Wales. And yet again, they proved it, you know. But what I would like to see them do is really when they have another team, you know, by the throat, that they really go for the kill. And I felt they could have won better. But then again, strange conditions, first game overseas, it's cold, it's not too pleasant, or a difficult field, the crowd's against you, and they got a win. So they, you know, we mustn't forget they're the second best side in the world, and they meant to beat teams like Wales.
Yeah, no, you definitely did call it. And Bismarck, I thought, was brilliant, and Farid Dupree had another good game. He still controls that game so well.
Yeah, he's key to the game. You can see why Haneke wanted him back so badly, you know. And funny enough, he wasn't at his best, you know, but he was also, I think he might have been struggling with the referee to an extent, but he wasn't right up there. And you know, I think, you know, Jacques Ferry came, made a crucial, you know, pick up and pass to Farid Dupree, so the Japanese connection came through. JP Peterson didn't look all that hot, but, you know, I think we got to, you know, give Haneke Mayer some leeway in this. You know, I don't like the way we play sometimes, but he's looking at everybody. He's casting the net really wide. And slowly but surely, we're putting together a team that I think by the time we get to the World Cup in 2015, we're going to be very confident.
Lambie?
Yeah, with Mornay going off so early, you know, he just seems to fall between the strands of the net. And I'd really like him to settle, you know. And unfortunately now it's a Northern Hemisphere tour, you know. So what I would like to see is if Lambie could play fly off or fullback, they gave him his head like he's allowed to do in the Sharks.
Yeah.
And they sort of said to him, have a go, my boy. Let's see what happens. You know, and I'm sure the players around him would love it. You know, so maybe he does wear that sort of innocent, puzzled look, but not quite what I was expecting.
The scrums, you talked about Alan Ruline. Everyone's talking about what a bad... I mean, a lot of people were talking about it yesterday, just a horrible game. And the scrums, Dan, are just a disaster. If they put a stopwatch on reset scrums, I think we're losing close to 15 minutes of a game with the scrums.
Oh, no, Jockers, it's shocking. You know, and when you get a field like the Millennium Stadium, which is very slippery on top, and the surface doesn't grip the stud at all, you know, so the props are really struggling. And what you've got to appreciate, this is 900 kilograms... crashing with 900 kilograms, you know, and what the referees are expecting the props and the locks to do, to be stable and steady, when they're actually meant also to have a go at each other, it's almost impossible. And the game really has to go and look at the scrum, you know. And I think what's happening here is that the new law, where they bind first and then scrum, is that South Africa really loves that law because we've got big, strong props and we feel that it's going to allow us to scrum again, you know. But now you've got a Northern Hemisphere referee, Alain Ruron, who said, no, you're not allowed to scrum. You've sort of almost got to stand against each other and keep square. Well, to me, that's not the point of the scrum at all, you know. And I don't know, it's way too long that it's taken that they pull in a group of very respected former front row forwards, you know, the Osterunds of the world and the Ollie Browns of the world, and said, you guys come and tell us what's wrong with the scrum. You know, people like Barley Swart, for instance, who spent a lifetime coaching the scrum. What do we do to get a stable scrum but still keep the competition? Because the law says it has to be a contest for the ball. And then every now and again you run into a referee that doesn't allow you to compete, and then you get a game like this one where the referee was the dominant figure, and it spoiled it for the crowd and it spoiled it for the TV audience.
Can you stay in Istanbul? Because I think this is the clearest line we've ever had on the show with you.
I'm so pleased to hear that, because I heard the last time we went through was a little bit fake. But I have to really admit to you that you nearly caught me with my pants down.
Well, that's not great news. Why is that?
No, I was going through the security. And, you know, these days it's laptops out, belts off, jackets down, everything. And I only just managed to get decent again before I spoke on the radio.
Jesus, poor Turkish girls, Danny.
Well, you can say that again.
Love your work, my boy.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. What can I say?
Have a safe trip back. And Danny, thanks for your time, boy.
Yeah, I look forward to that, Jocelyn.
Cheers. And Dan Retief, our Sports Fire rugby analyst, still in Istanbul. Saw a story today about Lance Armstrong and how he vows to be 100% transparent when it comes to a doping inquiry. And just a few days ago, Bloomberg News filmmaker Alex Gibney was talking about his latest documentary, The Armstrong Lie.
Tell us how this project started and where you ended up, because where you ended up is not where you thought you were going to when you started this thing.
No, it went from breaking away to breaking bad. But I think it was a situation where it started as a film where I was going to follow Lance Armstrong for his comeback here. You know, he had been in retirement.
2009.
He had been in retirement. Now, as an old man, 38, he was going to come back and show the young kids, you know, how it was done. And I thought that was an interesting film. And I would follow him throughout the year. I was interested in his will. You know, we know his will as the cancer survivor, coming back, cheating death, and also maybe the darker side of his will. Maybe I suspected that he would, you know, do anything to win.
So when you started this, so much of it is about rebuilding his brand and who his name was. And then in the end, it was his brand, his name, getting destroyed. How did he change as an individual when you interacted with him, I would say before and after?
I'm not sure he changed enough. I mean, I think one of the things we're all trying to reckon with is whether or not Lance will come to grips with just how severely he's disappointed all of us. He had created this fantastic story. You know, the film is really about the anatomy of a lie, but the lie was so big. You know, he didn't just say, look, I've never tested positive. He said, how dare you say that I...
The Lance Armstrong.
As a cancer survivor would ever use performance-enhancing drugs. Now, that's a way of kind of implicating cancer survivors around the world in that lie.
Well, your film is a monument, if you will, to Lance Armstrong's lies and the truth that we've now learned. He didn't just... I mean, we know that he lied to everybody, but he lied to you personally on camera. We have a clip of just that happening. Have a look at this.
You know, I know what I didn't do. So therefore, I sleep at night. And I'm one of the greatest writers of all time.
So, Alex, when Lance said these things to you, at the time, 2009, did you believe them?
Well, look, you know, I have to be honest and say this. Lance Armstrong is not the first person who's lied to me. after all, I did a film on Enron, as you may recall. And so I suspected that Lance had dope before, but you couldn't say that out loud. But he did.
Why? Why did you? Yeah.
Yeah, and how strong was your suspicion?
Look, if you looked at the 7 years that he had won the Tour de France, all the people who shared the podium with him in those 7 years, save one, had been popped at one time or another for doping. So you think, well, is it really possible that Lance is the only one who's clean and he's that much better than everybody else who's doping? It seemed pretty unlikely.
So now that the film has come on to the other side, has Lance tried to stop it?
No. You know, I think that part of Lance is interesting. He's sort of like, okay, you know, bring it on. It's like...
Really?
Yeah.
Even though he knows, like, there he is looking at you saying, I'm just one of the greatest riders of all time. He wouldn't go to extraordinary lengths to stop this narrative from getting out there. I mean, he has to want to rebuild his name in some way.
Well, I think part of rebuilding his name is coming clean. The problem people are having is he's not coming clean all the way. I mean, he called me up maybe a month or so before his Oprah confession, and he said, look, it's all true. I did dope. I did lie to you. I apologize. And then I began to say, look, you owe me an opportunity to go back and talk about it again. So that's how he was going to make it right.
N, I've just got wind of an imminent security breach.
Don't worry, I've already destroyed Document Y.
You did what?
Relax, Bo. I first converted it into digital format with Document Manager NX.
Great. Now everyone has access to it.
I saved it as a password-protected PDF.
Really?
And I'm tracking any activity on it.
Darn it. With document management that good, I'll soon be out of a job.
You want to know my secret? A secure document solution from Ricoh. I'll even give you the password. Ricoh.co.za. Ricoh. Imagine change.
Yesterday I played in a mixed golf event at Copperleaf, and that's the old Ernie Els Club and old Gardner Ross. And what a golf experience. I tell you, the course was in mint condition. It's a five-star experience with all the service, the clubhouse, just the whole facility. Dave Usendorf and the guys and that whole team have done an unbelievable job in getting Copperleaf to be one of the top golf clubs in the country. And also had the fortune of playing in a four-ball with 27-year-old Kim Williams, a girl who's won just about every amateur title and now is hoping to get her European tour card. And she joins us now on SportsFire tonight. Kim, great to have you on the show.
Hi, Graham. Yeah, nice to be there.
Sorry about my golf yesterday.
Not a problem, Graham. I don't think it was that bad.
You're too kind. It was a four-ball lines, two to count. I don't think Joff has contributed too much. But you're 69. You know, yeah, Kim, watching you play, I mean, you shot 69 yesterday with ease. It could have been a 65. I think they're going to have to move those ladies' tees back for you at Copperleaf.
Yeah, I know. The ladies' tees at Copperleaf are, you know, it makes it quite easy for us. But on a good practice day, I'll play off the mains, and then it becomes a good challenge.
And do you actually play out of Copperleaf? Is that your home course?
Yes, that's my home course.
You've had a stellar amateur career. You're off to Morocco in a few weeks' time for the final round of qualifying to try and get your European Tour card. And just tell us how many players, how many cards, and what you've been through already to get to this final stage.
Graham, well, basically it's more or less around 120 players. And then there's a cut after four rounds. Top 50 and ties go through. And then you play one more round, the fifth round, and then after that, the top 50 and ties get their playing privileges for the next season in Europe. And I was fortunate enough to get through to final qualifying based on my amateur ranking, world ranking. The top 25 girls in the amateur world rankings get exempt straight through to final stage. So that's how I managed to get through to final stage.
So if you finish in the top 30, you automatically just get a card. Is it just for 1 year?
Yeah, it's playing privileges for 1 year. And then those cards are also categorized. So it's you obviously want to finish quite high up in that top 30 so that you know you're closer to the top of the list. Because if there's only 15 positions in a tournament, if you've got the 16th card, you're not getting in. So you've got to try and finish up quite high.
And Morocco, have you played out there before?
Yeah, I went last year. I played tour school there as well. And unfortunately, I missed it by five shots. So yeah, it's a nice place. It's just a bit of a culture shock, but at least this time around, I know what to expect.
And you feeling good about your game?
I am. I think I'm in a good place at the moment. My game's really come on nicely. I've just come back from America a week ago, so I played nicely in America, and it was a good confidence booster. So I think this time around, I think the odds are in my favour.
Playing in America, was that just just to get your game in tune, or was it actually some mini tour?
No, it was a tournament that I got selected for to represent South Africa. We were two girls and two guys that went across to compete against the top 20 countries in the world.
And how did you guys finish up there?
We, as a team, we finished tied fifth, and then the girls individual, we finished we finished tied third, and individually I finished third.
Fantastic. Yeah, we speak about it often with the Sunshine Tour golfers. We've spoken to Leanne Pace, we've spoken to Ashley Simon on the show. When it comes to traveling and golfers, the costs involved and the sponsors, and how are you managing to do all this traveling and obviously the tour, trying to get your tour card? Have you got sponsors, or is this pretty much your parents that are forking out for this?
No, it's pretty much my parents that fork out the cost for me playing golf. I was fortunate enough, though, that Women's Golf South Africa, the amateur board, was kind enough to give me 25,000 rand towards tour school. That only covers half the cost to getting to tour school.
Sure.
So the rest of the year is pretty much all on my parents. And it ends up being an expensive year. I mean, amateur golf, obviously there's no prize money involved. So, a year on the amateur circuit, you're looking at close to 100,000 rand, and then at the end of the year, tour schools, another 50,000 rand. So it becomes quite an expensive sport.
Yeah, and that's where it just grates me, when a sports minister can spend 65 million on one night for the sports awards, money that should be going to, athletes like yourself. The opportunity comes once in a lifetime to get out there. And club sponsors, are you sponsored club-wise?
I've got an equipment sponsor.
Okay.
From Mizuno, and then a clothing sponsor from Cutter & Buck, and that's as well. It's just purely equipment and clothing. There's no finances attached to that. And then obviously Copperleaf as well is kind enough to sponsor me my membership, so that's also a great help. So every little bit counts, it takes a little bit extra off the end total that my parents have to fork out.
Yeah, you definitely can't wear Dave Usendorf's clothes, because those aren't going to be way too big, I think. And Kimmy, tell us a little bit more about yourself, where you grew up, school, and how you got started playing golf.
I went to school at Cornwall Hill College. I got a sports bursary to go there for my high school to play hockey and girls cricket. I played hockey and girls cricket throughout school, provincially, and then towards the end of high school, I sort of realized that to get somewhere or to have a career in sports, it's probably better to go the individual route. And my dad said to me, well, tennis, athletics, or golf, and I thought, well, golf is probably pretty similar to hockey, if not a bit easier because the ball's not moving. I picked up golf clubs sort of towards the end of my standard 9, beginning of matric year. And, I haven't looked back since.
Cricket, were you a bowler or batsman?
I was a bit of an all-rounder. I bowled first change for at provincial level and batted number 3, number 4.
Wow. So, didn't realise that about you. You're quite a multi-talented sports lady.
I suppose I come from a bit of a sporting family. My two older brothers, sort of beat me up quite a bit with their on the... the back garden when we were young. I was the guinea pig that had to bowl and fetch the balls all day.
Well, now you're teaching them a lesson on the golf course, I hope.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to.
Beautiful. South African ladies golf, I wouldn't say in the doldrums, but it's been tough. There's no real tour. But next year there's a bit of a ray of hope. I think there's something like 4 ladies events next year. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very nice that Investec has brought something to the table. There's 4 events called the Race to Invest Tech Cup in the beginning of next year, and it all sounds great. So hopefully we can get some girls from Europe to come out, because being in the beginning of the year, the European tour or the season hasn't started, and we used to have tournaments in South Africa, and the European girls used to come out and play the tournaments as sort of a pre-season training, because it's so cheap for them to come out to South Africa and play golf here. So, you know, hopefully that tour will kick off quite nicely and it can only grow from there. And then in April we've got the SA Open. And then after that it's pretty much nothing for the rest of the year.
Your favourite course?
Favourite course in South Africa, I suppose I'd have to say Copperleaf.
No, that's a diplomatic answer.
Favourite tournament course would be Clove Valley, down in Cape Town, in the country. And then overseas is probably where I've just come from, Whispering Pines.
Okay, and favourite club in the bag?
My driver's quite an ego-boosting driver.
I saw that yesterday. Boy, do you hit it long. All right, and then just finally, Kimmy, your amateur career. I mean, for you, your most satisfying win? You've won so many titles, but which one really gave you the real, you know, the real boost?
I think 2010 was a good year for me. I won the ESA amateur double. It was when the stroke play and the match play were still played in the same week. I won the stroke play and the match play, so that has to be my biggest win to date so far.
Kim Williams, been great chatting to you on SportsFire tonight. Kimmy, all the best with that qualification, and we're really holding thumbs for you that you get that European Tour card. You deserve it.
Thank you very much, Graham. I appreciate it.
Take care then. And
Yeah,
you too. And if there are any sponsors out there, you speak to the Sunshine Tour guys, some of them get opportunities in the United States where guys look after them. But here's an opportunity with a girl who's an incredible golfer, fantastic person, will be a great ambassador for South African golf. Why not get involved and just take that chance? If you've got some kind of sponsorship that you can help Kim Williams with, you can either send me a tweet or get some more details from Dave Usendorf or anybody at Copperleaf. So, Rafael Nadal against Novak Djokovic. That's the ATP Tour final, and I guess fairly appropriate. They've been the best two players so far this year. But it doesn't matter who wins the final. Nadal will finish the year as world number one, something the Spaniard says is very important to him.
Very happy for everything. It's the perfect way to finish the season, you know, after probably one of the best seasons of my career, finish being in a final here in a tournament that I love so much, but I never have the luck to win is great. I want to wish Roger, real champion, all the best for the next season. Good holidays now, and I hope he recover well. Probably he was a little bit unlucky about having a very tough match yesterday against Del Potro, so I benefit on that.
You've obviously won pretty much everything in the game. You've won the four Grand Slam titles, Olympic gold medal and a Davis Cup. You've yet to win this title. How much would it mean to you?
Well, I'm going to try my best tomorrow. No, it's always a very special tournament, and especially here, the atmosphere in London in the O2 is one of the best that I ever played. So just many thanks, everybody.
Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, that final today, the ATP Tour final, the season ender. Surfing, not a sport we talk about that often, but we'd love to give the Minnow sport some coverage because they really deserve it. And it was a women's surf challenge in Cape Town at the weekend. Another win for Tanika Hoffman from Hout Bay, who's really making a name for herself in the sport of surfing. Tanika, thanks for joining us on SportsFire tonight.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
And congratulations, first of all, on the win at the weekend. And how does this win rank up there with some of your other wins? But, I mean, I guess three-time South African champion, it doesn't get much bigger than that here locally.
Well, it's great. It was good to be defending my title. We won the event last year, so I just went in full force, tried my best. And, yeah, I'm really happy with my win.
Great surf. I heard the waves are good. Long Beach in Komaki, is that one of your favorite places?
Yes, well, that's where I grew up surfing. So I used to live down at the beach every day. So whenever there's a contest there, I'm really happy because I know it like the back of my hand. So I just love being able to be in the water, compete there. So, yeah, and the waves are great for everyone.
Is that very important for a surfer to know? I mean, we talk about all sports, and knowing the conditions is a big plus. Is surfing a massive plus if you do know all the conditions?
I definitely think it does help you a lot because you kind of know where the waves come from and you know the spot a little better, whereas if you're surfing a place you've never been to, you don't really know what to expect. But I mean, surfing is always different anyway. Like, when you go in the water, you're never going to have the same session as what you did the last time. So it's much of a match, but it definitely does help you if you know the spot.
And where do you do most of your surfing, your practicing and stuff?
At the moment, I surf mainly Sea Point, Lanzadno. I do surf Cormorant quite often as well.
Let's see, Sea Point, isn't that near Granny's pool? Are there any waves there?
Yeah, there's some waves there. It's very nice because it doesn't get as crowded as other spots.
All right. And Tanika, how old are you now, and what are your plans for the future?
I'm 21 at the moment, and I'm hoping to continue and compete on the world qualifying for the next year. So taking it a step further and seeing how that goes, and yeah, I'll take it from there.
You've been a member of the South African team for a few years now, and you've travelled quite a bit. Favourite destination?
Yeah, I've been to so many amazing places. I love places where the water's warm and I can surf a lot of waves, especially coming from Cape Town. I think this year we went to Panama, which is really amazing. South Africa won the gold medal at the ISA World Surfing Champ as well, which was definitely a highlight of my surfing career so far, and I think instantly made Panama one of my favorite spots.
Wow. And anyone else in your family surfed? Because how did you get started in the sport?
No one else in my family surfed. When I started, my parents gave it a go. My brother tried it out. But I just kind of got into it because I love being at the beach and spending time in the water. So, I mean, kind of just came naturally to me when I saw surf lessons. I couldn't resist.
And when you're not surfing, other hobbies?
I spend majority of my time surfing, when I'm not surfing, and probably training and looking for waves for somewhere to surf, or just spending time with friends or on the beach with family.
And I mean, coaching wise, do you guys all have coaches? I mean, someone that can pick up where your faults may be, and I mean, because it's quite difficult unless you're really watching it on television. I mean, if you're out there trying to catch the big waves, so for a coach to actually see what you're doing out there.
Yeah, we do have coaches, and there's coaches everywhere we travel to, so it's also really nice to get different opinions and different points of views. So I have a coach that I work with here at home, and when I travel, I try to get as many different opinions and have people watch my surfing. Just, I don't know, the more you help, the better, I guess.
And South African surfing, you guys have been doing some unbelievable stuff. I mean, I'm not just talking about Geordie Smith, and a lot of the girls, a lot of the guys. South Africa is producing top-class surfers all the time.
Yes, especially this year. We've done really well. With Bianca on the CT, South Africa won ISA World Games. We had some longboarding champs. Geordie's been doing really well. So it's been a good year for South African surfing.
And your favorite surfer to watch, or favorite surfer you try to emulate?
There's so many great surfers out there. I can't name anyone right now. Yeah.
And Tanika, did you grow up in Cape Town then?
Yes, I grew up in Cape Town. I grew up surfing Long Beach and Cormorant, and yeah, now I'm based in Gauteng.
Okay, and going on the world tour. So that's going to be really the last thing you really want to achieve.
Yes, that would be amazing. If I could qualify, it would be really great. So next year, I'm just putting my all into it. At the moment, I'm training as much as I can, spend as much time in the water, and surfing with my coach.
Fantastic. Well, Tanika, it's been great chatting to you on SportsFire tonight, and congrats again on another win. And let's hope there are many more wins in the tank to come.
Thanks so much.
Pleasure. Tanika Hoffman there, one of South Africa's top female surfers. And really, I must say, South African surfing, I'm not quite sure budgetary-wise. I think they do get some money from sport and recreation. But it seems like surfing has certainly got their administration in order, and the surfers are continuing to shine.
I'm Kath Lee here. Robin van Persie header was the difference as Manchester United beat Arsenal 1-0 at Old Trafford in the Premier League on Sunday. After a shaky start to the season, United are now unbeaten in 5 games and they lie 5 points from the top of the league. The United boss David Moyes wants to keep the run going.
I would want to be top. Why would you want to be 5 points off it? You want to be top. I don't know any other way, but we are, because we've had a few games which we didn't do as well as we should have done, and we'll have to try and claw the points back as the season goes on.
Manchester City suffered their 4th defeat on the road this season, losing 1-0 at Sunderland. Despite the loss, the City boss Manuel Pellegrini is still going to keep the same attacking game plan.
I see that if we must change something to win away, I will do it. But I think that the games that we lost in this Premier League, the 4 games we lost, I think I was in the way we play. I don't think we need to change.
Newcastle United's notched a surprise 1-0 victory away at White Hart Lane. The Magpies keeper Tim Krul pulled off a number of spectacular saves against Tottenham. His manager Alan Pardew was grateful.
They didn't have many chances. They had a few shots from outside the area in the first half, but two great hits, and he saved those. Left-hand corner, right-hand corner. I think he's the best Dutch goalie there is, and I think he's one of the best in the Premier League. He's proven that today. Second half, he was terrific.
Swansea and Stoke City played out a 3-3 draw in the other league game on Sunday. Now, three Premier League players have been nominated for the 2013 BBC Africa Footballer of the Year Award. Manchester City's Yaya Toure, Chelsea's John Obi Mikel and Liverpool's Victor Moses join Rennes' Jonathan Petroipa and Borussia Dortmund's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang on the shortlist. And you can get lots more about all the nominees and how you can vote for the winner at bbc.com/African football. And of course, lots more on all the day's football news on your mobile phone, bbc.com/mobile. That's your BBC Premier League update. More tomorrow.
Soccer 6 is your chance to score big. Over 4 million rand is won on Soccer 6 every week, and it's easy to play. To win, you must forecast the results of 6 matches. Play by phone, online, or on your mobile. Soccer 6, your best soccer bet.
Looking at that cricket-wise, Pakistan are 47-3, needing 268, so still looking good for the Proteas. Teletrack analyst Shane McGregor joins us now. Hello, Shane Mac.
Jaffers, how's it been? How are you?
Yeah, not too. You're sounding very chipper. Is that because Liverpool are second in the table?
Yeah, that's, and I get to play against them on Saturday as well, you know, so quite lekker. And yeah, I'm here in Soweto now, Nike Centre, playing a friendly tonight and gearing up for the big game on Saturday for us.
What do you mean for us? What do you mean?
Hey,
are you playing against the Liverpool legends? Are coming to town? They've got a big golf day at Houghton tomorrow, so they actually playing a game. You playing a game against them?
Yeah, Chiefs legends are playing Liverpool legends Saturday in Durban.
I didn't even know there was a game.
Yeah, no, we're playing a big game 2 o'clock Saturday, Durban. I think it's on SABC3, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so you get to play against some of your heroes.
Yeah, be good. I won't take it lightly on them, that's for sure. Putting a few tackles in. I hope Dalglish and a few others is here, and Probler and them. Would be nice to play against them.
No, that's right. It's a big golf day at Houghton tomorrow. I'm actually playing in the day, so I'm also looking forward to that. Are you playing in the day as well?
No, not playing the golf. We're going down to Durban, I think, Wednesday, Thursday. So getting ready for the game, man.
Fantastic. Right, United beating Arsenal at the weekend. Do you think that could be a turning point?
You know, I could be. You know, they've been blown hot and cold. But, you know, it was a big result for them. They had to get that result. They had to get the win. And it's blown the league open now. You know, you don't want one team to get too far ahead. And I said to you beginning of the year, you know, it's going to be up and down. It's going to be like this the whole year. So it's a good result for the whole league overall. But United's still not convincing me. They're not at their best. But they're going to get better as the year goes on.
What's going on with Man City? 8th in the table with 4 losses already.
It's their away form, Joffers. I mean, they can't seem to play away from home, which is a bit of a worry. And I think Pellegrini has seen that now, and he's going to have to change the way he plays away from home. You know, you can't lose away from home and expect to win the league. You've got to get results. And, yeah, he's got to change things there very quick.
Chelsea, lucky to get a point, maybe?
Never a penalty, Joffers. Never in my life of football have I seen a penalty given like that. Yeah, never a penalty. West Brom must be very upset about that. And, yeah, unfortunately, it goes against you, but a goal's a goal, and they got the point. And you know, unlucky for Chelsea. I mean, unlucky for them.
We quickly spoke about Liverpool, but a 4-0 win over Fulham. Fulham just, I think they're going to battle this season as well, but still, it's good, you know, when you're putting 4 past a team, a good bounce-back win that for Liverpool.
Yeah, you've got to get those goals, you know, and they seem to be doing it at the moment. Liverpool scoring freely, but Fulham under pressure. Yor must be looking over his shoulder for his job. I know the manager came out, well, the owner came out and said, your job is safe. It's always a kiss of death. But Fulham aren't playing very well at the moment. So, you know, Liverpool, good results. You've still got to beat those teams. And in years gone by, Liverpool haven't been beating those teams. So it's a good showing for us, I think.
I'd be amiss not to mention my Canaries. 3-1 win over West Ham. Here comes Norwich up the table, 3rd from the bottom now. Watch out.
Don't get too excited, Joffers. Don't get too excited. A good win against the West Ham team that have been doing fairly well. But, yeah, also still got going to be a long season for you, I think. More losses than wins there, but it's a good win. And you need to win those home games. I think you've saved Houghton's job for a few more weeks. But, yeah, still a lot to go.
Pool payouts, I take it they must have been fairly big with City losing and Chelsea drawing.
Yeah, well, the 13 paid 550,000, the soccer 10 paid 15,000, and then even on the week, on Sunday, you know, there were five winners in the soccer 10 that paid 112,000, and the soccer 13 paid over 50,000. So all huge payouts, and you know what, you just got to get one result and these things pay.
South African horse racing highlights from the weekend. I think there was plenty of racing.
Yeah, they were racing all over the country. My highlight was in Cape Town, the Snake Stable. They ran first and second, had the Exacta. I actually tipped the second horse. It was in the Choice Carriers Guineas trial. I tipped the second horse, highly decorated. Got beaten by the stable companion fast time. He came flying on the inside. But two good runs, and Snake's starting to stop fire with his horses. Watch out for him.
And I was also just looking at overseas, Tony McCoy. I mean, the guy is just incredible. 4,000 winners.
Yeah, can you believe it? And I wonder how many of them he's done for that McManaman, or whatever his name is. But I mean, that's brilliant. 4,000 winners. Which jockey in his lifetime does it? And you know, the good thing is, and you can see why. I mean, the guy doesn't drink alcohol or anything like that. So, you know, he lives a clean life. And, you know, good luck to him. He's still going to have a few more winners, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he gets those, I mean, over the jumps, he gets those horses home. Even if, I mean, obviously he gets normally the best rides, but even some of the 10-1, 12-1 shots he gets home, he's just a phenomenal jockey.
He's phenomenal. He doesn't give up, you know, so yeah, he's brilliant. So.
PA's pick sixes, anybody catch anything?
Oh, there were a couple, eh? The PA Kenilworth got you 2.6 million, 2,300 winners are paid, 11,300. But the big one was on Sunday again, the pick six. They got you 2.4 million, four winners, paying 500,000, you know. So also huge payouts. But we're starting to see the better horses come out now, Joffers, and it's all worth looking for. This weekend, the big jockey challenge in Joburg, Cape Town and Durban, and big racing coming up.
Banker for the week?
I'm leaving it out, Joffers. No bankers. I'm a bit of form at the moment. So I couldn't tip my hat at anyone, so I've just given it a break for now.
No problem, Shane Mack. Shane, thanks, my boy. We'll catch
thanks,
up again
Joffers.
Next Monday.
Cool, man. Thanks, man.
Shane McGregor, Teletrack Analyst, Channel 239. All the horse racing and, of course, all the different shows, Neil Andrews and the panel. Early mornings and then Saturday and Sunday as well. Sunday, I think, with Crystal Arnold. I think Rod McCurdy's still making a guest appearance. At 182 kilograms. Right, celebrity birthdays for the 11th of November. Gilles de Ferron, the Brazilian race driver. Manish, the Portuguese footballer. Ben Holyoke, the English cricketer. Lou Vincent, the New Zealand cricketer. Philip Lahm, the German footballer. Robin Utapa, the Indian cricket player. Francois Chanc-Duc, the French rugby player, born this day in 1986. And then born this day in 1951, Fuzzy Zeller, American golfer. And who will ever forget that real nasty incident, 1997, with those alleged racist comments that he made about Tiger Woods at the Masters that severely damaged his career?
He's doing quite well. Pretty impressive. The little boy's driving it well. He's putting well. He's doing everything it takes to win. So you know what you guys do when he gets in here? Pat him on the back, say congratulations, enjoy it, and tell him not to serve fried chicken next year. Got it.
Or collard greens or whatever the hell he's serving.
Yeah, and it took Tiger a while to accept his apology afterwards, but it certainly damaged Fuzzy Zeller's career. And what's crazy, the irony of it all, is that I was actually working for CNN at the time, and I was at Augusta and even holding the microphone for that interview, but obviously didn't realize the severity of those comments. But it certainly damaged Fuzzy Zeller's career, and I don't think he ever really recovered properly. Sponsors dropped him. And it wasn't too long ago that, remember Sergio Garcia, there was another comment about chicken and stuff like that. And yeah, certainly unnecessary when it comes to any form of racism. Best on the TV for the early part of this week. Tuesday, you got Momentum, One Day Cup Cricket. A Wednesday, South Africa, Pakistan, the first T20. Swimming, FINA World Cup in Beijing. And Wednesday night, Bafana Bafana against Spain. International friendly. I think kickoff is pretty late, like 9 o'clock at the FNB Stadium. Thursday, India against the West Indies, the second test, World Tour Championship Golf and the FINA World Cup in Beijing. Looking at the cricket now, Pakistan, 54 for 3, that's after 15 overs. The target is 269. I don't know what's happened to Norm. We haven't been able to locate Norm, so I think what we'll have to do is just play a little bit of music. But first of all, I just want to bring you up to speed on some other big stories from today. I see that Felipe Massa will be driving for Williams next season as the teammate to the 24-year-old Finn Valtteri Bottas. So that's big news in Formula One. Felipe Massa to drive for Williams. And Lionel Messi ruled out for up to 2 months. Barcelona will be without Messi for between 6 to 8 weeks because of a hamstring injury.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M-M-M-M-M. Just put your paws up, because you were born this way, baby. My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends. Subway can rejoice the truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different heart is not a sin. Believe capital H I.
Whether you're broke or evergreen, your black, white, beige, chola, descent, your Lebanese, your Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast for leader tease, rejoice and love yourself today, 'cause baby, you were born
no matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, chola, or Orient, mate, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave.
Lady Gaga and Born This Way. Thanks, T. I would never have known who that was. You know, the very first concert I ever went to was Sha Na Na at Sun City. I think you're too young to remember that, but Bowser. Good night, sweetheart. It's time to go on. Da, 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 dum. Okay, that's bad. Jeez, we need Norm back. I don't know where he is. But anyway, that's going to do it for Sports Fire. In case you missed the show, don't forget we do have podcasts available at the Sports Fire podcast. You can catch on the website or either on Twitter tonight as well. The website, sportsfire.co.za. This has been Sports Fire here on all the channels that you listen to, wherever you may be. I mean, you could be, we don't know where you're listening, but geez, I'm trying to kill time. But that's it. From all the team, we'll be back Thursday. Good night.
All the sports, all the news, SportsFire. Asking the questions no one else will. Join me, Graham Joffe, as we scrum down with players, coaches and administrators. 1 hour of hard-hitting, informing, controversial, entertaining sports talk. Sportsfire, powered by Ricoh.